Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. So this episode of the Pre-Post Film Review, we are going to be talking about the new Alex Garland film, Annihilation. But it's going to be a little bit different because both John and myself were too excited about this film that we didn't want to watch the trailer, which is rare given the premise of this podcast. So what we're going to do is we're just going to jump straight into a full review of the feature. We're going to skip the trailer impressions section. So if you haven't seen Annihilation, we're going to talk about spoilers right from the get-go. So watch the film, pop back, and listen to John and myself.
Read the book if you want to.
You know, that might come up because I have read the book.
Yes.
Watch the film, read the book, pop back. And listen to John and myself review Annihilation.
Yeah. And we should say, if you live anywhere outside of America, you can just watch this on Netflix. Very easy.
Everywhere in the world other than America. Correct.
Yeah. I don't think anyone listens in the America,
I don't think anyone listens anywhere. So it's fine.
Period.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
What do you think I do when you're away? You think I'm out in the garden, pining, looking up at the sky? Why aren't you here?
I gotta leave a day early.
Your husband's here.
Let me see him. He's extremely ill. You have to tell me where he was, what he was doing.
It was his decision to go in. It's something they termed the Shimmer.
We've sent in drones and teams of people,
but nothing comes back.
But something has.
You're a biologist.
You served in the military.
If I knew what happened, I could save his life.
The boundary's getting...
Okay, John. We've both now seen Annihilation. This was, at least for myself, I think probably for both of us, one of our most anticipated films probably of 2017, given that it was delayed, and now 2018. It's, we've been waiting for this for a long time, given how much we both loved Ex Machina. We're both in a little bit of a different situation here. You going in cold, me having read the book.
Completely cold.
I think we're in a quite... a unique situation, so I'm very, very curious, given what you know about the film being very little, but given how much we loved Ex Machina, I'm curious to know what your expectations were going in and what you thought of this film, given as well that in Australia and UK, we weren't allowed to see it in a cinema. We had to watch it on Netflix at home, so I'm curious... what your expectations were and what the viewing experience was like for Annihilation, one of our most anticipated films of the year.
Well, my expectations were pretty high, and just from the get-go, based on nothing else except for Ex Machina, I think that was such an amazing film and so confidently made that I just trusted Alex Garland after that to deliver, the same way I would Dan Trachtenberg whenever his next film comes out after 10 Cloverfield Lane. It was a just such a solid effort that I'm like, okay, whatever you make now, I'm excited for that. So on just on that basic level, I was very excited. I really didn't know much about the film. I didn't look into it much. Kind of for the same reason. It was just like blind faith that it would be good. I knew it was another kind of hard sci-fi, and so I was excited about that. I was expecting some interesting thematic material and allegory and metaphor and all that good sci-fi stuff, some cool visuals. You know, as you said, I didn't watch the trailer, so all I saw was an occasional like image of these women in like a jungle or something with some guns, and I knew that it was about they were entering sort of some bubble or some kind of weird atmosphere on Earth, that was it. That's all I knew. Yeah, so I guess I was mainly excited just based on the Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. Watching the movie, I wish I had seen it on the big screen. Guys,
let's be clear. What, how did you watch the film?
Yeah, so I watched it on Netflix, at home.
Okay. So on the couch, on the TV.
On the couch, on the TV. Like, I had the volume up high.
That's good.
To try and get as close to a cinema experience as really I could. Close.
Scooch the couch up. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Yeah, so I that was strange in and of itself, because we were expecting a theatrical release way up until close to the end of its post production, I suppose, and then they got cold feet and decided to sell it to Netflix, it seems. So that was a bit strange, but I think this is. I'm pretty torn on this movie, Matt, because I think the first half, I was not really liking it that much. I thought it was borderline bad at times, in the writing and some of the visuals even. But then the second half just goes nuts. And I really, really loved the stuff that happens, particularly in the third act at the very end of the film. I really, really loved it. And so I don't know whether my love for that stuff at the end is greater than the dislike for the stuff at the start. So I'm still deciding how much overall I enjoyed the film.
Is there a clear break where you can tell where you flipped from dislike to like? Do you know what I mean? Was there a point in the film?
Almost. Yeah.
With it. Yeah. When was it?
I can't remember what comes first. It was either the scene with the bear coming into the building, or the flower people, the plant people.
Interesting.
They're around the same point in the film. It's like it's about halfway.
Bears first, I think, before the flower people. Yep.
The bears first? Yep, okay. So around that moment, and that's when stuff, I think, starts to get interesting. Very interesting. In terms of what's happening in the world and what's happening in that film. I think it was just the setup felt very rushed to me. It felt like B-movie, sci-fi, made-for-TV dialogue at the start. And when they all meet, it felt very, this didn't feel very natural to me. And the base that they're in feels like kind of low budget. And I just wasn't really enjoying that first half. But once they really get into the thick of it in the Shimmer, and there's all these weird, monstrosities around, it steps up a notch in terms of production and writing and thematic stuff. And so I was on board for the second half. But before we go even further into that, I'm curious what you thought, Matt, knowing kind of what to expect, having read the book. How did you go into this? And then what were your general
thoughts?
Well,
actually, that's a very good point. I had a very interesting experience with this film. This film was a very rare film in the sense that it's very unlike me to read something before I see it. Like, I'm almost the opposite. Given my profession and my passion, I usually see a film before I read the source material. It's rare for me to read something before I see the adaptation. But this was an exception to that rule. And I had read the first novel. Actually, I'd read the first two. It's a trilogy. So I read the first two novels in this three book trilogy before seeing this film, and I was super excited, and perhaps we can go into this a little bit later, but given what happens in that first book, I was excited not because I thought the book would make an amazing film, but I was excited because I couldn't understand how you would make that book into a film, if that makes sense. I was fascinated as to how you would translate that to the extreme, to the screen. And it turns out they didn't. I mean, I've seen this film twice now, and
okay,
similar to you, here in London, there was no theatrical release. Twice I've watched it on Netflix. Again, there's caveats to this. The first way I watched it was very interesting because I watched it in virtual reality with my
I
watched it with a Google Daydream headset. Because I was so annoyed that I could not watch it in a cinema, I decided to try the VR experience, which I think was actually beneficial. Like it removes all distractions, but it does reduce the fidelity of the image a little bit. But I don't regret doing that. And then I subsequently have watched it a second time since then, just on my laptop. I would say, after my first viewing, my biggest takeaway was that I was almost puzzled as to why they called this film Annihilation, because it almost is unrecognizable in terms of the book. It is so... Other than the fact that some... Even that's different. The fact that... I mean, there's five women in the film. There's four women very specifically in the... Like, it's just very different. And then anything that happens... Every single thing that happens in the book is very, very different to the film and the way it pans. It's just, it's almost like, why even call it the same thing? Which I bring up because I found that very, very distracting on my first viewing and very frustrating because there was very specific things. I was excited to see how they would articulate that in a visual form.
Yep.
But I calmed down. On my first viewing, I would say for the first maybe two thirds, I would say I probably actively disliked the film. Probably based on my expectations from the book. But appreciated the boldness of the third act, even though it's nothing to do with the book. It's completely different.
Yeah, okay.
But appreciated the boldness of it.
Yeah.
Then calmed myself down over a few days and then rewatched it. And I would say on the rewatching, I appreciated it much, much more. Almost to the extent that I want to rewatch it again and perhaps think that this could be, like, borderline a great film. Like, I think it... As much as I dislike the fact that it discards everything in the book, like, it uses this weird premise to kind of springboard into kind of ideas of, I don't know, like, self and self-destruction and how humans deal with not only themselves, but the ideas of how they see themselves. I don't know, it's just, I feel like it... On the second viewing, it became more of a metaphor than a literal story. And I appreciate it much, much more. And enjoyed it a lot more. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it again for a third time, which is a rare thing to say, actually. Like,
True. Yeah, I think... I want to watch it again too, because I really liked the second half and the last third in particular. And that is when you realize that it is more metaphor, as you say, and it's more about ideas than a realistic sci-fi plot realistic, grounded, coherent sci-fi plot. It's not really interested in that. But the way the movie starts, it suggests that it is. And so I think that threw me off because it felt, as I said, unnatural and rushed and a bit phony at the start. But when you sort of recontextualize it by the end, it's more like something like mother, almost. Not quite as experimental as that, but it's, you know, you're not in a normal world, and you're almost in Natalie Portman's version of reality. Memory of reality. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I like that. I really like that. And I think there are parts of it which are great, as you say. I just need perhaps another rewatch and more time to decide whether I want to apply that to the whole
package. I would say two things. One thing that I hated was the, like, country and western score. Like,
That was very odd.
On the nose. And I agree. I just didn't like any time that popped up. It just felt so jarring and, I don't know, out of it just really, like, wrenched me out. But on the second viewing, there's the whatever the song is that they play. I mean, it feels a bit rushed, but at the very beginning when she's sort of like repainting the bedroom and there's like this like poppy country song playing, but there's the lyrics of it are very much like about, it says something about two together, like it's about like multiplicity of people. Like it's weird. You listen to it, it's like about, it's almost like the beginning of the cells dividing. Like it's literally it's on the nose when you actually listen to the lyrics, but it's like hammering at home. But having said that, the one thing I hated that, but I loved the other side of the score. Like it has this, when there's certain like horrific moments, and there's one moment in particular. Well, there's two. One, where they have this like choral, like choir singing this, like, oh, not singing. I don't know. This is like weird chanty. I don't know how to describe it. Like music building when they watch the videotape of Oscar Isaac's, like what the previous expedition did, and the way he cuts, like, I mean, obviously we're in massive spoiler territory here, but he cuts open the stomach of a comrade, and the like glee and the like, that is legitimately, and the what, not only that, when he rips it open and you see the living kind of, it's not intestines, but it's almost like a snake or some sort of like thing.
Yes.
Moving around. Rotating is the wrong word. I don't know. You know what I mean. But but there's a moment where he like kind of like puts his hand in and it's like rotating around his hand with the blood and everything. Yeah. And then he's like, he has this like grin and he's happy. Like washing the blood. Like it's like he's proved something to people with this horrific act, and everyone was like in on it. They were all like part of this. And the way that music builds is legitimately one of the most disturbing things I have ever seen, like ever. You know, like it made me feel ill and made my skin crawl, and I mean that in the most complimentary way I can. Like it's
yeah, absolutely.
Perfection in terms of that kind of horror. Like, perfection, you know?
Yeah, and I totally agree.
The second time the score works perfectly is the very, very end of when she goes down inside the lighthouse and you see that weird alien thing. And then that's when the score does this, like, 180 and turns into this, like, pulsing electro, like, weirdness. And that's,
droning, like, kind
that
of.
That is when it. Yeah. That is when it becomes cinematic heaven, right? Like that's when you watch it and you go, I want to be watching this in a cinema, right? Like the pulsing. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. It's incredible. Yeah.
And bold and weird and like unlike anything you've ever seen. Yeah.
Disturbing. Total. Yeah. Yeah. Genuinely inventive and original for this kind of abstract stuff that you get in sci-fi, like the ending of 2001 or I don't know, I can't think of another example.
Totally. I mean, I think that's a hallmark. Like that's a touchstone for him. You know, he's very obviously going for that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I completely agree about the score. Yeah, but see, again, it's like this thing where the first half of the movie is just like doesn't gel, and then it comes together at the end very succinctly and purposefully and nicely. And I don't know how much of that is a poor edit and a poor creative choice, or somehow all intentional.
Honestly, I think that country music is like 90% of the culprit there. That is, it's so jarring, and it feels so poppy and weird when that song, I mean, like I said, I get the lyrics is like on a repeat viewing is very thematically relevant, but like it feels out of place, it feels forced. I 100% agree, 100%.
Yeah,
but also like having said that, like once I let go of how different it was and what the kind of horror that it was going through, it has moments of like the kind of shit I feel like you and me, John, like that weird horror, like the bear when it like it like screams the woman's voice, like the shit that you will never get out of your chilling. Mind, right?
I've never seen anything like that. Yeah. Proper nightmare, like nightmare stuff in that sense of like it just doesn't make sense, you know, like your brain can't put two and two together when it comes to that, and the look of it's designed so well, and that's a part where they've put money into the CGI too.
I think it's practical, a lot of that actually. It looks like really the skull, yeah,
the head, yeah I think so too, yeah. That that scene was so effective, and as we sort of talked about earlier, that's where the movie turned for me, and I really sort of,
you were on board, yeah,
you know, my ears pricked up or whatever, and I was like, oh okay, this is where we're going. Is that scene in the book?
No. That idea very vaguely, but
I mean, it's just it's much like the scene with Oscar Isaac cutting open his crew member. Like, this is another scene where it's just like it's very tightly constructed. You're in a confined space, you know, they're literally tied to the chairs as well in that scene, and it's just this horrific nightmare hell creature that's slowly walking around, and it's so much more scary because it's taking its time, and it seems to not really be able to tell they're there, but can kind of smell them or something. And then every time it opens its mouth and you have that ungodly human noise coming out, it's just so effective. I loved that. And then I guess after that you've got the subtle creepiness of the plants and flowers that are taking human shape. You're constantly expecting them to move or something. I loved that. Then one of the teammates starts turning into one or something like that. You get suggestions of that, and then she just kind of disappears.
I loved all that, but I also, this would ping back to one of my problems with the film, is the CGI-ness of some of it. Like, I feel like
yes. So the plant stuff looked really bad.
The idea is
the concept was cool,
idea is perfection, but, and not from the book. But perfection, but the execution is lacking. I agree.
Yeah, and I think visually overall it's inconsistent. It's the conceptually it's all very good, but sometimes, as I said, it looks quite cheap.
I would agree, 100%.
Or obviously CGI, and then other times, like the bear, they put a lot of effort into, or more money or something, and the end is a strange mixture, actually, of good and bad CGI, but in an effective way, I would argue. I think it adds to the creepiness and the surrealness of that world.
I would agree. The first time I watched it, I felt like the sort of like weird metallic doppelganger is almost felt bad. Like it felt like I was gonna say,
feels like 90s the
Lawnmower
Man,
felt like that. Like, you know, like it felt bad. Yeah. Honestly bad. Like distractingly bad. But then the second but bear in mind, I was watching this in VR on my Google Play headset. So
lying on your bed.
I rewatched it in a higher definition. It felt less bad, but still bad. Like it doesn't look great. But again, like I think on my second viewing, when I got to that point, I was so deep in the metaphor spiral that it became less important that it looked hyper realistic, and more that it was this metaphorical mirror, because the whole film is kind of about metaphorical mirrors and self-destruction. Like, you know, there's that literal dialogue where they were saying, Jennifer Jason Leigh, or whatever her character is, talks about, like, no one wants to commit suicide, but we all self-destruct in our own private way. And we learn about how Natalie Portman's character has cheated on her husband. And we literally see Oscar Isaac, you know, suicide with the... It's just... There's layers and layers of...
Yeah, that was really...
Like, once you look at, like I said before, I guess, as metaphor and the splitting of this character, then it becomes more interesting than just looking at it as this, like, CGI lawnmower man shit 90s, like, mirror of Natalie Portman. Do you know what I mean?
Hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I do think that the weirdness of how it looks adds to an unsettling feeling, because it's humanoid. And it's... I don't know, that creeps me out. It's kind of like sometimes old effects
That's a very good point.
You know? It's like uncanny valley, but
in a way. I know what you mean. Yeah. And do you know what I really loved about it is that it wasn't like a perfect mirror. Like she would like move and sit up and it would do the same thing, but like slightly differently. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
You could see, it was not like a bunch of atoms perfectly mirroring her. It had its own thought process and was like, oh, she's sitting up. I'll sit up too. Oh, how is she positioning herself? But in this weird way where
it wasn't looking at it. I'll copy. It's creepy.
So sometimes it was looking at her and sometimes it wasn't. So it still knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
It's such an effective scene. And especially when she runs for the door.
Crushes her against
it. And it runs after her and smooshes up against her. And it's almost like I got the sense it doesn't know.
No.
It's killing her. It's sort of copying her. 100%. And she's pushing. She says that later on.
Like it didn't know that it was like trying to. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But there's also, did you notice there's a thing where she has the like figure eight tattoo on her arm that she doesn't have at the beginning.
Yes.
But one of the crew members have. But then when she leaves, she has like there's this amalgamation of cells and personality and I don't know. I think it's a richer film than I give it credit for.
Yeah, I love all that. I think so too.
Get better with each viewing, I think.
I agree. I think there is a lot going on in there that you don't realize almost until towards the end of the first viewing, I would say. And it's not, some of it's, you know, stands out, but there's a lot that you really have to kind of analyze and think about. You know, it's not immediately obvious, a lot of it. And you could take it, you could interpret it many ways. Because there's also this idea that at the end, she has reconnected with her partner, but it's not, in the world of the film, it's not him, and maybe not even her, although kind of is her. But they've both been through a trauma or a depression or a self-analysis, if you take the metaphor, and they're connecting then at the end, maybe, as different people. The same way if you lose someone or maybe you go through a big change in a relationship, you do come out as a different person. And so there's definitely that kind of stuff going on. But then it's very ambiguous, the ending too. I mean, there's even that weird shimmer in their eyes, right? Yeah. So they've they've both taken molecules from this other world that is with them. I mean, Oscar Isaac is literally a different person, but...
Exactly. I initially disliked that, but I think...
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it.
The second viewing, I liked it more because you're right. Oscar Isaac is literally, given the video footage we've seen, not Oscar Isaac. Like, he is now a different person. But Natalie Portman is a more, like, ambiguous case, right?
Yeah,
like,
she's absorbed it. Eyes, but she hasn't fully... Because I guess you see her... Or she could have had the same decision, right, that he made.
Exactly.
Because
her
doppelganger appears and she kills it and decides she's too... I guess she's stronger.
In the same way that Oscar Isaac kills himself.
Himself.
Like, it's like a mirror.
That's
exactly.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there. It just... I need to think about it, you know? Like.
But that, I think that's a sign of a good film.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean that in a good way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so interesting that the first half is misleading in a way, almost. Or, you know, it starts out like Black Mirror or like Lost.
It feels very familiar. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like a mystery to be solved. And then... By the end, it's like it's not about that. Yeah. So, yeah, it bears.
It's funny that you say that because, like what I said at the beginning, how the film has almost nothing to do with the book. Hearing you say that, that is the book. Like the book opens with a kind of a mystery, and it even on the jacket is pitched as a J.J. Abrams' mystery box, but has nothing. It is not interested in solving that mystery.
No.
It is nothing like the film, but it has nothing to do with solving that mystery. So perhaps that, like, the spirit of it is in there in some strange way that I didn't perceive in my first two viewings.
Yeah. That's interesting. Do you feel that it does carry the spirit of the book? Or is it so different that not really? Okay, not at all. Yeah. So I wonder then.
Is this like a Kubrick? It touches on a couple of things, but no.
Yeah.
Maybe the Kubrick comparison.
Kubrick Shining sort of thing.
Yeah. Maybe. And I'm learning to like this film the more that I watch it. Like.
Yeah.
I really like it the second time. Like, borderline think it's great. The second time, and I want to watch it a third time, and it may even go up higher. But it was a hard watch the first time because it's just like so different to the like I said, to the extent it's like, why even call it the same name? It's not even anything.
I'm sure I read somewhere or heard somewhere that he read the book once and purposely didn't pick it back up for some reason.
Yeah, interesting.
As an experiment and just taking the essence of the book and then doing his own thing with it.
I would argue that it's not even the essence, but fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's an interesting way to adapt a book, you know?
But that's not to say something interesting hasn't come out of it, because that's almost my argument. Like,
yeah,
it's taken this weird...
It's his own thing.
Exactly. It's turned into this own thing that is as interesting, if not more so, than what the book turned out to be. Yeah. Your praise or bagging the CGI and stuff. Like, I give this film a lot of credit for being like a horror film almost in like broad daylight. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like beautiful colors. There's this like weird shimmery.
There's constantly that rainbow in the background, sort of. Yeah.
And that becomes unsettling.
Yeah.
Once you realize what it represents, it's like the colors are like not positive, which is a rare thing to pull off. You know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And something as presumably beautiful as a field of flowers that are shaped
very
like
good point.
People,
yeah.
Is so unsettling.
Yeah.
Totally. And, you know, the light where she visits the lighthouse at the end. I think it might be sunset, or it's definitely not nighttime anyway. And so, but then you've got the weird crystal kind of trees. And,
I forgot about that.
Alien-like tunnel, which looks very, like from Alien when they get down to that.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, when she first gets down there, is like she has no face, right? Like,
yeah, yeah,
it's weird.
I love that nightmare imagery. It's so cool. It's just so cool. Except then she says like annihilation, which is a bit weird. It's always strange when you recognize someone, like, the
screams
title.
The title of the film at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's just it takes you out of the movie for a second, I think. Yeah. I mean, yeah, visually, you know, it was inconsistent in terms of the production value, but yes. The concepts were awesome. Really, really awesome.
Exactly. Like the this very is a good example of like head being in the right place 100% of the time, and perhaps the visuals not matching the,
yeah, exactly. But you can forgive that because of that reason, you know.
And it's rich, right? Like it, like what you said, it makes you want to revisit it, you know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like I'm sure there's way more hints, like that tattoo thing. I'm sure there's lots more of that thing going on that you'd pick
actually,
up and repeat.
One thing I like the way Garland shoots the beginning when Portman and Isaac like meet again. He almost shoots their meeting through a glass of water, and you see that like the hands are like the way the light's like refracted in a weird way. It's like. Weird. And then again, when he is like in the hospital bed, he shoots it through the plastic germ guard thing that they put outside. So it's like the image inside is refracted in this weird way.
Really,
which
point.
Pays off when you when you hear the thesis of the film about how the DNA is being refracted within this like weird bubble.
Everything's mixing. Every form of anything of life.
Though having said that, I disliked how they like literally explained why the bear was screaming her name when they're like outside. She's like, oh, she must have been dying in a like painful way. And it's like, it's scarier to not know, and we kind of got
I agree with that. There's a couple of scenes like that that they explain things a bit too much.
I would agree.
And even some of the flashbacks or flash forwards or flash to present with Natalie Portman being sort of interrogated. Same. I don't know. Some of that stuff felt a bit.
I had a weird theory on my second viewing, right? Of like the way they represent the flashbacks of Oscar Isaac and Natalie Portman, like in their romantic, idyllic. Yeah. Circumstances, and it was almost like my theory was it was almost like the cells dividing, right? So the first time you see it is like a little glimpse of one cell, like you see like 5 seconds of the like he's tickling her or whatever, and then the next time it's like split into two, and you see like you see it longer. It's not just the tickle, you see like they're looking at the moon and then they chat and then they tickle. It's like, and then it's the same thing with the relationship with the man that her coworker that she cheats on the husband with. Like at first you see them as just like coworkers together, and then it's like that relationship expands, and then you see them like, or no, actually you see her back as they're like having sex, right? And you see his face, and then the next time you go back, that scene is expanded, and you see the back of the sex, and then you see the like the repercussions of that. Like it's almost like the film itself is the cells dividing into like, you know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like the second viewing, this kind of stuff bubbles up. Like
and that's all seems very intentional. I would say because they're both like that. Both of the flashbacks, where it is just a glimpse, and then. You know,
then more context comes into view. I think it's smart. It's like what we say about form and theme, like
melding
a little bit.
I think, you know, even for all my criticisms, that it's made with very good intentions, intelligent, heartfelt, passionate, intentions. So, you know, it's the kind of film that we love to talk about, Matt, and that we wished got made more, man. And the
we got a cinema theatrical release. Exactly.
Yeah, the distribution of it is interesting because Netflix is eating that market of not top tier blockbuster, not completely indie, that kind of middle ground, like films for adults, basically, that want to think about stuff. There's not a huge theatrical market for that anymore. And so on the one hand, Netflix is good because it's like, hey, everyone can watch this. But on the other hand, they're watching it at TV at home where they can pause it. They can binge on Twitter, their phone. When the credits come up, you get an ad straight away for something else. It takes you straight out of the ambience of the movie. It's a real mixed bag. It's an ongoing discussion. I feel like we could even have a, you know, we need to talk about Netflix episode.
I'm up for that.
Yeah. Where we just talk about like the pros and cons of where this stuff is going. Cause it's really interesting.
Let's do it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of Annihilation, given that you can just watch it on Netflix right now, I feel like thumbs up from both of us. Watch it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an experience, a strange, creepy, totally unique, sometimes frustrating, but sometimes overall disturbing, interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate that it exists and that
totally.
You know, they got enough of a budget to make something like this, and for so many people to be able to see it is a good thing as well. I think. Yeah, I really admire it and I like it a lot too. And I think upon a second viewing, I'll like it even more.
I think you will too, John. Because it's grown on me a lot on my second viewing. I'm really looking forward to a third. I think you'll be on the same page.
Yeah, good stuff. Listening to this episode of the pre-post film review, we'd love to hear what you guys thought about Annihilation.
It really was.
Yeah, did you love it from start to finish? Did you hate it? I can see some people just not enjoying this at all. Have you read the book? Send us an email at prepostfilmreview@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and we will always reply.
We will,
because we're just nice.
Yeah.
Guys, yeah.
We're on Facebook as well, so you can comment, like, message us, whatever you like over there. We're on Twitter, @prepostfr. Feel free to tweet us over there. We also post sort of news stories and whenever new episodes go live. But the most important thing is to subscribe. If you like the show, hit subscribe. If you really like the show, or just, you know, if you're feeling generous, leave us a review. We'd love to hear what you guys think. Because 5 stars helps us reach new listeners, find new audiences. That'd be amazing. Thank you in advance.
Yep. Yeah, thanks in advance. And if you didn't do it, fuck you.
Get out.
You can also find us on Letterboxd and follow us there and set up your own little film diary and check out other movies we've been watching and log your own. It's a great little film community. And we'd love it if you would join us next episode. We're going to be talking about the second Spielberg film of the year, Ready Player One.
Can't fucking wait.
And that should be an interesting one, I think.
Ready.
Player. Ha 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 ha.